We're holding on Lamed Vav Amud Beis by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, Sanhedrin hoisa kachatsi gurun agula. The Sanhedrin, and here we mean whether it was a small Sanhedrin of 23 or the Sanhedrin gula of 71. They would sit in a half circle. Kachatsi gurun agula literally means like half of a round threshing floor. A threshing floor where they thresh the grain would be round generally because, you would have the way threshing works is you take the grain, you take the pile of grain mixed with straw and shells and whatnot, and then put it on the ground, and then you have oxen or other animals or whatever go round and round and thresh it to break open the shells. So the threshing floor would be round. So kachatsigo in agula means like half of a round threshing floor. So in other words, a half circle. The point of it being, in other words, Rashi says, we want them, well, the Mishnah says, Kadeshi Uroy and Zeh, so they can see each other. Rashi points out, in other words, if they're in a straight line, they're not going to see each other. And if they're going to be in a full circle, then the problem is you still have the Bali Din, the Bali Din and the Edim still would need to break open the circle to come in, because you also want, Rashi points out, you don't want, for example, if the Bala Din are facing one part of the base din and facing away from the other part. So they have to sit in a semicircle in order that this way all of that is taken care of. All the Dayanim are able to see one another, and all of them are also able to see the Edim and the Bala Din. It continues the Mishnah. Then you have, standing in front of them, are the two Sofer HaDayanim, the two court reporters that we talked about earlier in this parak. Echad miyamin ve'echad mismel, one stands to the right, one to the left. V'koisvin divrei mechayvin v'divrei mezakin. And they write the words of those who say he's chayev, and the word he says that he's zakai, that he's innocent. It's in parenthesis because it mentions on the side the gear says really supposed to be the other way around. First mention the mezakin, those who declare him innocent, and then mechayvin. As we learned earlier in the parak, either way, the point is, each dayan needs to state his reason why he holds this person is guilty or why he holds he's innocent, and we need the sofer adiyonim to write that down because, as we've learned previously, you want to make sure that two of them are not basing themselves on different psukim to arrive at the same drasha or other things like that. And we said also this way, in case they forget, then hearing the transcript can jog their memory. Now Rashi learns that it means that both court reporters are writing everything. Both of them are writing what the mezakim say. Both of them are writing what the mechayvim say. And the point is, this way they can be a cross check on one another in case there's a mistake or something missing in one of them. Then we can reconstruct it from the other. The Rambam, on the other hand, learns differently. He says that one sofer was appointed to write the divrei hamezakin, and one sofer was appointed to write the divrei hamechayvim. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Shloisha. Rabbi Yehuda says that there weren't two court reporters, but three. And he says, Echad Kosev Divrei HaMezakin, the Echad Kosev Divrei HaMechayvin. One writes the reason for everyone, each Dayan who says why I'm declaring him innocent, that particular reporter would be assigned to write down why he says so. The Echad Kosev Divrei HaMechayvin, the other one would be writing for each one who says guilty, why he says so. Vahashlishi, and the third one, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, Kosev Divrei HaMezakin v'Divrei HaMechayvin, he writes both of them. The idea being, in other words, Rashi explains, Rabbi Yehuda holds, listen, you have 23 or 71 Dayanim speaking up, each giving their opinion, there's so much writing to do that if there's only two court reporters, two stenographers, then one of them, then they may end up making a mistake. They may end up getting mixed up. So rather, Rashi has learned that the point is that according to the Tanakhama, each of the reporters is writing everything. So now Rabbi Yehuda is saying, therefore, according to Rashi, that's a little too much. If each of them has to write everything, then they're likely to get mixed up and write down something wrong. Instead, we should have one of them assigned to write Divrei HaMechayvin, one of them to write Divrei HaMezakin, and then the third one will write down both of them, and that way again we have the third one as a cross check on both of them. But this way at least we have what's likely to be a more accurate transcript of the mezakin and of the mechayvin, rather than burdening them with writing the whole thing. Again, the Rambam, who learns that in any case, even the Tanakhama is saying that both of them write. So one thing is we can say that still the Rabbi Yehuda holds that the point is you would need two edim for each of them, and therefore, so that the Pharisee Yisrael talks about and explains, in effect, what we want to have is that we're going to have of the three court reporters, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, so you can have for each thing that's written down, Reuven, who wrote down the Divrei Hamazaken, and Levi, who writes both of them, will be an edus on that this transcript is correct. And similarly, Shimon and Levi together will be edim that the transcript of the Divrei Hamachayvin is correct. And that would be why Rabbi Yehuda is insisting that you have to have three of them. Okay. Now, so you have the Dayanim themselves sitting in a semicircle, then you have three rows of 23 each, Tamar Chachamim sitting in front of them. Now, most of the time, those Tamar Chachamim are going to be there, of course, to learn Torah. But the point is, as the Gemara is going to explain, first of all, we've learned earlier in the Masechta that if they're deadlocked, then you need to add Dayanim. So this way, these three rows serve as a pool of potential Dayanim in case they needed to add them. We also learned earlier in the Perek that if one of the Talmidim has something to say on behalf of the accused, L'schus, then we listen to him. But the point is, this way we don't necessarily need all of them, but the point is, this way we have them available in case we need to add Dayanim, because they're deadlocked, but we also have, in case, as the Gemara is going to say, as the Mishnah is going to say, in case one of the Dayanim passes away, or becomes otherwise unavailable, then also they take from these rows to refill the number of Dayanim. Do you need that by the Sanhedrin Gdola? The Meiri says no, because after all, if the whole point of having this many Talmudim there is in case, we learned earlier in the Masechta, you can have that a Beis Din can start out with 23 and they can't come to a decision and they need to keep on adding Dayanim until they reach 71, and 71 is the maximum, so they may need as many as 48 Dayanim, and therefore they have all of this pool of Dayanim available. Whereas by the Beis Din Agadol, by the Sanhedrin Gdola, you don't need that. The maximum is going to be 71 altogether anyhow. So therefore, the Meiri learns they didn't need to have the rows of Talmidim learning sitting in front of them. Not everybody agrees with that. Rashi points out, why Davka three rows? Now, it's like this. In principle, all we need is 48. Because, again, suppose that we start out with 23. We're saying that it might be that they deadlock, and we need to add two Dayanim, and then add another two Dayanim, and so on and so forth. We may need to add as many as 48, because 23 plus 48 equals 71. Now, how are we going to arrange them? Rashi points out, we can't have that the most obvious way would be to have two rows of 24 Talmidim each. But it's not really Derech Eretz Dik that the rows should be longer than the size of the Sanhedrin itself. The Sanhedrin itself, we're saying, is 23, and then they're going to have in front of them a row of 24 Talmidim. It's not really Derech Eretz Dik. So therefore, we're not going to start having two rows of 23 and then one row with only two people. So therefore, we have to have the rows themselves of 23 in size, and therefore we need three rows, which adds up to 69 Talmidim. We're never going to need 69 to add to the Beis Din, but that's how we do it. The Mishnah continues, Kol echad ve'echad makiris mekoymei. Now these Talmidim are not just sitting randomly. Each one knows his place, meaning, in other words, that depending on the greatness of the Talmud is what place he's assigned to. The great, that Rashi points out also, by the way, so Rashi writes that these rows of Talmidim are also sitting in a semicircle. The difference being that the Dayanim sit on benches and the Talmidim sit on the ground. Anyway, the point is that each of them knows his place, meaning, in other words, we say that the greatest Talmud, however the Beis Din evaluates their greatness, the greatest one is going to sit in the first place in the first row. The next greatest one will be in the second place in the first row, and so forth, working our way back until throughout all 69 of them. And so the Mishnah continues, suppose now that they need to give smicha to one of the Talmidim. Now that could be, for example, one of the Dayanim passed away. It can also be, as we talked about previously, that, for example, one of the Talmidim has something to say that's relevant to the din Torah, that's l'schus of the defendant, and therefore they and they're going to put him on the Sanhedrin, as we touched on it before, and we're going to talk about in more detail in the next parak, and therefore they need to give him smicha. So now he's leaving his place among the Talmidim, and he's sitting on the benches with the Dayanim. So therefore, Sonchin min harishrona. So we take the Talmud from the we take a Talmud from the first row, and we appoint him. Now, how do we refill his place? So now we take one of the Talmidim from the second row and promote him, and he comes to the first row. So, in other words, Echad min Hashlish is Bolo Lishniya, and one of the Talmidim from the third row comes to the second. So, in other words, everybody is moving up one space. Everybody below that Talmud is moving up one space. Then they choose to fill up the last space on the third bench. They pick somebody from the community, somebody from, besides that you have the Dayanim themselves sitting in the half circle, and you have the Talmidim sitting in front of them. Besides which, you'd have regular people who come to the Beis Din to learn Torah. So they take one of them and they appoint him. He'll fill in the empty space on the third row. So now this new person wouldn't go and sit where the first one was. We don't say that he takes over the position of that first one and everybody else stays where he is. He sits in the appropriate place for him, which would be at the end of the third row. Rashi points out that after all, even the least important of the Talmidim is greater in knowledge of Torah than anybody from the Kohol. So that's why we're going in order. We're going in order, promoting them gradually. So as the Gemara is going to point out, everybody moves because we say that, again, the Talmidim are arranged in order of their Chochmah, in order of their greatness in Torah, or whatever criteria the Beis Din uses, and therefore when they move, then everybody's moving, and everybody's moving up one slot. So the Gemara starts off, Menahani Mili. Where do we know this, that the Sanhedrin should sit in a half circle? Now, we said the practical reasons so they can see each other. Nevertheless, the Aruch HaNer points out that the Gemara's question is that still, so the Gemara's question is not so much why we should do that. We know from the Mishnah why we should do that, but we're going to bring a pasuk showing that it was actually done this way. One of the Mephoshim on the Mishnah, Kola Remez, points out another angle on it. The Gemara can be asking, who says they were sitting in a semicircle? If they were to sit in the form of a half square, like a bracket, exactly that, a half square, they would also see each other. So why don't they do that? Why dafka a half circle? Because the pasuk says in Shir HaShirim, in praise of the Jewish people, Shorereth, your navel. And the Gemara is going to quote the pasuk, and then we're going to douse in it phrase by phrase. Shorereich, your navel, agan hasahar, is like a moon-shaped bowl. Al yechzer hamozeg, there will never be lacking in it properly mixed wine. The pasuk continues. So let's douse in the pasuk as follows. Shorereich zu Sanhedrin. The word shorereich, your navel, refers to the Sanhedrin. The Lama Nikra Shma Shorereich, why is it called Shorereich? Your navel, she yeshevis v'tibura shel olam, because the Sanhedrin is located in the navel of the world, meaning, in other words, that Yerushalayim and the Beis Mikdash is in the center of the world, however you define that exactly. I mean, geographically, for one thing, back then, when they only knew of the three continents, Europe, Asia, and Africa, then Eretz Yisrael is, in fact, in the middle of that. But more to the point, also, Marsha points out, it means it's not too hot, not too cold, so therefore it's a nice climate, and therefore it's a place that's good, that's very conducive to Chochmah. The Maharal in one place points out when we say that the Eretz Yisrael is high, that we say when we say Eretz Yisrael is higher than all the other lands, means in other words that if you take a globe and put Eretz Yisrael on the top, then it will be higher than everything else. Everything else on the globe slopes away from it. In the same vein, then here, Ben Tzori Shalolam can mean in that sense as well, but in other words, it means that Eretz Yisrael is the greatest place for Ruchnius. Anyway, but therefore it's compared to the navel. There's also the point elsewhere, it talks about the idea that a baby in the womb is nourished through its navel, in the same way the Sanhedrin nourish us with Torah. Anyway, that's why they're compared to the navel, the belly button.
Is this when the Beis HaMikdash is present, or even afterwards?
So it's an interesting point, actually. The Chida says we're going to have several different comparisons of the Sanhedrin that we're going to quote from this pasuk. One of them is like the navel, and then the Gemara is going to go on to quote another part of the pasuk that compares it to a heap of wheat. So he says that's actually referring to different times in the history of the Jewish people. When the Sanhedrin is in the Lushkas HaGozis, then they're like the navel. Even when they're not, though, then, as we're going to go on to say in the Gemara, they're like a heap of wheat.
So what's the difference between navel and heap of wheat?
The difference is that the navel is the navel. It's located in the center of the body, and the body gets nourishment through it, at least when the baby is unborn. Afterwards, we're saying the Sanhedrin are not in their proper place. Nevertheless, they still benefit us, just like a person benefits from a heap of wheat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the Gemara continues, the darshaning. So again, so it's called shorereich because it's like a navel. Agan, when it says a bull, so we darshan the word agan, shimeginau kolo olam kuloi, that the Sanhedrin with their schusim protect the entire world. Agan melosh megin. They protect the entire world in the sense that they do justice, and then therefore, Aladin v'ala emes v'ala shalom, the world stands on din, and also when they're executing judgment down here like they're supposed to, then the Torah doesn't need, then Hashem doesn't need to do it milamayla. Next, Hasahar, we're saying like a moon shape, shidoimel Hasahar, because it's like a moon shape, like we said, it's like a semicircle. Marsha points out the reason why that's why we're comparing it to the moon rather than the sun. The moon is sometimes a semicircle, as opposed to the sun is always a full circle. Since, as we said, the Sanhedrin can't sit in a full circle, so yes, the moon sometimes, of course, is a full circle as well. Sometimes it disappears entirely. But we can compare, if we're going to compare the Sanhedrin to a hat, if we're going to say they sit in a half circle and we're going to compare them to something, it's going to be to the moon. Next, the pasuk continues, al yechzer ha-mozeg. The pasuk continues that the mozeg, the diluted wine will never be lacking. So that means, we learned this earlier in the Masechta, shim hutzrich echad mehem lotzis, if one of the members of the Sanhedrin has to leave for personal business or whatever, royin, then we have to see, is he able to? Im yesh esru m'shloisha k'neged Sanhedrin tana, if there are going to be 23 dayonim left, which corresponds to the size of the Sanhedrin Ketana, Yotze, then he can go out. V'im lav, and Yotze, if not, then he can't go out. There needs to be a quorum of 23 there at all times, as long as whenever they're in session. We learned earlier in the Masechta, how exactly do we get that from the word al yechzer ha-mozeg? So one point is, because wine is usually diluted, in those times, wine was usually diluted, one-third wine to two-thirds water, so therefore it means one-third of the Sanhedrin has to be left. 71, it doesn't divide evenly by 3, so you round down to 69, and 69 divided by 3 is 23. We learned earlier in the Masechta, Tosfos had pointed out another point as well. The word mozeg itself is gematria 50, so it means 50 members can't leave. 49 could leave. If 49 out of 71 leave, means you have 22, and since 22 in principle would be enough, except that you can't have an even number based in, like we learned earlier in the Masechta, so then we'll add a 23rd. So the pasuk is hinting, al yechzer mozeg, there will never be lacking mozeg, there will never be lacking 50 members of the Sanhedrin. As we learned earlier in the Masechta, that's only when they're going out for personal business, when they're going out for business involving the tzibur. We talked about, for example, over there, adding to the size of Yerushalayim, then all of them can leave. Next, the pasuk continues, bitnech arema schitim, the pasuk continues, your belly, your stomach is like a heap of wheat. So the Gemara says that also refers to the Sanhedrin. Ma arema schitim, a kol nenin mena. Just like everybody gains from a heap of wheat, it's a good supply of food. Sanhedrin, akol nen and mitamein, the same way the Sanhedrin, everybody benefits from the reasons, from the explanations in Torah that they give. And the pasuk finishes off, suga basheshanim. The pasuk finishes off that this heap of wheat is surrounded by a hedge of roses. Now, what does that mean? Even when the Sanhedrin is telling us an Isser, and they have only a fence of roses around it, in other words, not a strong stone fence, but even just like a weak hedge like that, where it would be very easy to break through it, lo yifritz behen process, the Jewish people do not break through such a hedge. So in other words, the Sanhedrin makes Xeris for us, as we're going to explain, and there's not necessarily, they don't need a strong fence. So in other words, even we have only a small separation from a matter of Isser is enough to keep us away from the Isser. That's in praise of us Jewish people, that like this, we don't need harsh We don't need strict gzeiros on top of gzeiros. We have, for example, a halacha. We say ein gozrin gzeiro l'gzeira and other such things like that. The point is, it's in praise of us Jewish people that we listen to our bata dinim, to our chachamim, and we follow what they say, even if all there is a hedge of roses over there, which otherwise would be very easy to break through. And we find behind the Amalei Ahu Min of Rav Kahana, as in fact we find that a certain Min asks Rav Kahana. He says, "Amritu, you Jews say Nida Shori Liachudi Bahadi Gavra, that a woman, a wife, when she's Nida, is allowed to be in Yichud with her husband." The question is, the Min asks, how is that possible? Efshur Eish Ben Oras, is it possible that there would be fire near Neoras? Neoras means the combings that you comb out of flax. When you're producing flax, you have the combings, the little bits of stalk from the plant or whatever that are mixed in with it, which you comb out. It's very flammable stuff. So throughout Chas, Eish Ben Oras is a metaphor that's used for something that's very easily set on fire. So here you have, there's a fire of taiva between the husband and wife, and ne'oras, and you have this combings of flax, which are very easily set on fire, the enema have heves, how does it not burn? In other words, how is it possible, why didn't your chachamim, says the min, to Rav Kahana, why didn't your chachamim make an issur for a husband and wife to be in yichud when she's nida? Amalei, so Rav Kahana answers him exactly that. HaTorah he'idur aleinu suga b'sheshanim. The Torah itself is testifying about us that we are fenced in by a hedge of roses. Shafilu k'suga shoshashanim, exactly that. Like we just said, even when there's only a hedge of roses and it's so easy to break through, lo yifritz v'hen protzes, we Jews do not, in fact, break through it. We know the Torah says that a wife is off limits to her husband when she's nida, and even though it would be so easy to, violate that, nevertheless we don't, and therefore we can be in yichud with our wives, and it's not a problem. Tosfos points out, in other words, so the comparison dafka to a hedge of roses for one thing is because roses are red, and so is dam nida. In fact, Tosfos brings elsewhere that from a medrash, in fact, on this pasuk, that what happens is the man has a tremendous taiva for his wife, but she tells him, "I saw one little tiny drop of blood, like a red rose," and immediately he almost instinctively knows to stay away from her at a time like that. So therefore, Rav Kahana says that that's how it works. It wouldn't necessarily work for minim or goyim like that. They would need stronger deterrence, but for us Jewish people, it's fine. I once saw an explanation on it also that another reason why comparing it to roses, it's true, it would be very easy to break through a fence of roses. On the other hand, you wouldn't, because why wouldn't a person? Because he realizes the roses are beautiful plants, and he doesn't want to stamp trample them. The same way we Jews realize the beauty of mitzvahs, and therefore we don't need anything stronger to keep us away from Avera. Tosfos actually gets into a bit of discussion, la halacha, taka, how does it work? The fact is, we did learn earlier in the Masechta that midaraisa, it's also to be in yichud with a woman that you're not allowed to have relations with. For example, we said most relatives, or an eshes or whatever, midirabanan, we say even a pnuya, as we learned over there about the story of Amnon and Tamar. And the fact is, a husband and wife are also to each other when she's nida, so how does it work? And Tosfos answers because the issur of yichud is only when she's never going to become mutter, or at least it's not likely that she's going to become mutter, as opposed to over here, very simple. It's going to be a few days, and then she'll be tahor. So therefore, that's allowed. However, Tosfos does point out that there is now this only applies, the halacha, only if they've previously had relations. But for example, the Gemara elsewhere tells us if a chassan and kala have just gotten married and for whatever reason they're unable to have relations, the example it gives over there is where one of them is in avelos. But another example would be if she becomes a nida, then in fact it's true, then they can't be in yichud together, because then we have to be concerned. They've never even had relations yet. The Yetzirah might tack to get the better of them. Therefore, they do need, we find nowadays, you have when a couple gets married and the wife is nida, we try to avoid that when possible, but where it can't be avoided for one reason or another, then we have shomerim. We have a boy and a girl of an age that to avoid issues of yichud, stay together with them so that they don't have relations. So in other words, again, so Rav Kahana is telling this guy that's how it works with us Jewish people. Resh Lakish, Amar Mehocha, Resh Lakish says have a different drasha from which we can learn the same concept. also in Shir HaShirim. It says, Keselach HaRimon Rakosech. It says, literally the meaning of the pasuk is, your temples or your cheeks are like a slice of pomegranate. But we darshin from that. The word rakosech is similar to the word rekonin, which means empty. So it means, afilu rekonin shabach, even the empty ones among you Jewish people, among the Jewish people, the ones who seem to be empty of mitzvahs, malayan mitzvahs karimin, they're really as full of mitzvahs as a pomegranate is full of seeds. So again, therefore, even the least important yid, even a yid who seems to be a balaveris, nevertheless, he's still actually full of mitzvahs, and therefore we can trust him that he's not going to have relations with his wife when she's nida. An interesting point, the Netziv points out in Merom Esoda, how does Rekon and Shabbat come in over here? He says, because we find the Gemara in Makkos that says when a person has an opportunity to do an Aveda and he doesn't, and he avoids doing it, then Hashem rewards him as though he had actually done a mitzvah. So here we're talking about here he has the opportunity to have relations with his wife when she's a nidda, and he holds himself back, so therefore automatically that itself, we think that he's empty of mitzvahs, but really therefore he's actually getting filled up with mitzvahs like a pomegranate. Reb Zera Oma Mehocha, Reb Zera says, you have yet a third pasuk that expresses this point. Vayorach HaSreach B'godav, we find when Yaakov comes to get the brachas from Yitzchak, it says Yitzchak smelled the fragrance of his clothes. I'll take it begodav ela boigdav. Don't read begodav, his clothing, but boigdav, his disloyal ones. So we're saying that even a yid who seems to be disloyal to Torah, nevertheless they have a good fragrance of mitzvahs. Tosfos says, in fact, that also has to do with dam nida, in the sense dam nida has a smell, has a certain odor to it. The Gemara mentions in nida, for example, that there was a Rebbe Lozer was capable of distinguishing in that way between dam nida and other kinds of blood. So therefore, now when we're saying that even the Burgdim Shabbacha have a fragrance, so therefore it can refer also to that they stay away from a nida. And the Gemara tells a story in that connection about where we're saying that even the Burgdim, even the disloyal Jews, still have tremendous goodness, tremendous fragrance to them. So the Gemara tells a case. And Hanhu Biryoni, there were these Biryonim, wild people, they lived in Reb Zera's neighborhood. Have a Makarav Lahu, and Reb Zera was always trying to bring them close and always being friendly to them and everything, so that they would do tshuva. But the other Chachamim were upset with him for that. They felt that he shouldn't get involved with them, that they're no goodness, maybe it's impinging on the covert of his Torah, it's a waste of time, whatever they figured exactly. He noch nafshe did Reb Zera. Eventually, when Reb Zera passed away, Amri, these people, these Biryonim themselves, thought to themselves, they think to themselves, ad ha'idna, up until now, have a karicha kotin shake. Up until now, there was the one with the boot short legs. Now that refers to Reb Zera. The Gemara tells us in Bava Metzia that Reb Zera, at one point, he was trying to test whether he's immune to Gehenim. So one time he used to go every so often into an oven and see that he didn't get burnt, and he knew that would be a simon, that he's not going to get burnt in Gehenim either. But then the Gemara tells over there one time there was an ayin hara placed on him, and he ended up getting burnt. So from then on, his nickname was the short one with the burnt legs. We find elsewhere in the Gemara where the Chachamim sometimes called him that as an affectionate nickname, kind of. Zera, actually, the name Zera itself is related to the word Zera, which means small. So he was physically short, and now he had burnt legs as well. So we find that the Chachamim sometimes nicknamed him that sort of playfully. So now these Biryonim have no business calling Reb Zera that, but they were chutzpanyaks, but that was their style of speaking. I guess that was part of them being biryonim, is that they would speak in a chutzpahdik way like that. Anyway, they say to themselves, up until now, we had him, Dava Boy Alon Rachmi. He was davening for Rachmanus for us from Hashem. Hashta man Boy Alon Rachmi. Now who's going to daven for us? Yes, we have other chachamim, but none of the other chachamim want anything to do with us. So they started thinking thoughts of tshuva in their hearts, but of the tshuva, and sure enough, they ended up doing tshuva. So we see, in other words, that we see that even though they were rekonin, even though they're still speaking in that chutzpahdik way about Reb Zera, nevertheless, they actually had good in them, and they ended up doing tshuva. With that said, though, you know, you could say, so what were the other Chachamim thinking? Didn't they realize that the thing is possible? One interesting idea is maybe they figured, if Reb Zera also doesn't want so much to do with them, they might have done Shuvah much sooner. Like this, they only did Shuvah when Reb Zera passed away, realizing that they don't have anybody else instead of him. But how do you know? If he had also been Merachak them, maybe they would have done Shuvah much sooner. In any case, so, but yeah, then we see from that that Rikonim Shabachom Olei Mitzvah Kirimin. Marsha discusses over here and then points out a question. In that case, you know, we have famously Moshe Rabbeinu says in Parshas Vayelach, he says a Kavachomer, Madoch, when I'm alive, you're disobeying Hashem so much. So after I pass away, but after Yachrei Moshe, how much more so when I'm gone that you're going to be disobeying Hashem? So why don't we answer Fakir to like these Biryonim over here? As long as Moshe Rabbeinu was alive to daven for us, then yeah, we figure we can get away with it. And now when you're gone, then yeah, we're gonna have no choice but to do the right thing. So there's a variety of different explanations that that Mephoshim give to answer that question. One point is that after all, after Moshe, you have Yeshua as well. They might also think they could get away with it. Anyway. So we had three different psukim. We had three different psukim that the Gemara is bringing over here to illustrate this point that we stay away from Averis, even where all there is a hedge of roses. So the Torah Chaim actually explains that we're talking about three different groups. Reb Kahana was talking about people who are tzaddikim, because after all, earlier in the pasuk that we were talking about the Sanhedrin. Reb Shlokish is talking about people who may not have much in the way of Torah and mitzvahs. They're amei aretz, but at least they try to avoid averus. And Reb Zera is saying even people, even actual baal averus, are still they still have a connection to the Eibishter, and they still have. And they still have schusim, and they can still do tshuva even though you think that they're hopeless. Okay. Mao Shaw, by the way, also explains as far as some of the other psukim that they were darshaning that we have other details in them that also tell us that it has to do with nida and with everything else that we were talking about. Among other things, he says when you have the pasuk about the slice of pomegranate, so you also have the pasuk continues over there. The whole pasuk goes over there. Your lips are like a thread of scarlet. And your speech is pleasing. And then the pasuk continues with the part about tefelah harim and rakosich. So he explains, in other words, that you have that here. When we talk about the lips, we can also talk about the lips, the Sfasayim Shomata, where the husband would want to have relations with his wife. But all of a sudden, it's Kechot Hashani, there's a red thread over there, she's Nida, and therefore with Baruch Nova, and she tells him, you know what, I'm Nida, and he realizes even though he's Rekon in Shabbat, nevertheless he stays away. So it is really directly connected to the Drasha about Dam Nida.
Even though
he would have wanted so badly to go and have relations with her using the Sfasayim Shomata, nevertheless he holds himself back.
Yeah. Who says this?
And this is Marsha says this. Yeah. Okay. Next, we said in the Mishnah Sholosh Shuros, we said there are three rows of Chachamim sitting in front of the Beis, of Talmidim sitting in front of the Beis Din, and then we said that if they need a sub, then if we need a sub in Beis Din, if one of the Dayanim has passed away or whatever, then we said what we do is everybody moves up one space. The senior Talmud over there, the greatest Talmud, moves up and becomes a member of the Beis Din, and we said every person moves up one space. Now you think about it, that means that you have within each row itself, the one who's sitting at the head of that row is the greatest of the Talmidim in that row. He's like the leader of the Talmidim in that row. An interesting thing, by the way, in the times of the Gaonim, they had an arrangement along those lines as well. In the times of the Gaonim, you'd have the Gaon, the Rosh Hashiva, sitting in front. In front of him would be rows of Talmidim. In the times of the Gaonim, the way they did it was they would have seven rows of 10 Talmidim each. And then the person at the head of each row was called the Reish Kala. And he was like the leader. He was the teacher of all the Talmidim in that group. So when the Goyin, when the Rosh Hashiva would be teaching something, then the head of that row, the Reish Kala or the Aluf of that group would go and teach all the would go and teach it and explain it to all the other ones, and the Chazara and whatever. Yeah. So here in the same thing with the three rows, the head of each row is exactly that. He's not just sitting at the head of the row. He's the leader of that row. So the Gemara says, Amar Abaye, Shema Amina, we see from the way the Mishnah phrases it, Ki Naidi Kulu Naidi. When they move, all of them move. Like we said, everybody moves up one space. So the Gemara asks, why? The Lei Melahu, why can't the one, let's say the one who just received smicha, why does he end up being the head of the second row, for example? Why doesn't he say Ad Hidna Habni Yisivna Bereisha? I used to be sitting at the head, Hashem is visibly bedanvi, and now you're putting me at the tail because now I'm being promoted to the Sanhedrin, for example. I'm being promoted to the Beis Din, but now I'm the junior member of the Beis Din, whereas before I was the senior member of my group. And the same way, the Talmud at the head of the second row now becomes the last one of the first. So it's not really right. The Gemara says, Omar Abaya, de omru lehochi. True, but they can answer him back. They say, you know, as the Mishnah says, have a zon of la'aroyas, better be a tail of the lions, v'alti roish l'shu'olim, don't be the head of the foxes. In other words, you're still better off. It's still a greater zchus to be the least important member of the higher ranking group rather than the most important member of a lesser group. The Yerushalmi actually brings in this connection of a statement the other way around. Heve Rosh Lashu Olam Ba'alti Zon of La Royas. However, Meforashim explained that the Yerushalmi is saying that may be how people think, but we tell them no, that's not the right way. The right way is the way it says in the Mishnah. Okay. Mishnah says.
I mean, I guess every time they had a judgment, they have to start figure out who's great. The other one.
No, most of the time they have. Most of the time, they're saying everybody Makiris Makoyim. Everybody has his particular assigned place.
Yeah, but it depends if it's a bigger bez and small bez.
No, so we said that we're talking about in a basin of 23, normally they just need the 23 dayanim, and that's that. The only, most of the time, the only reason they need a sub is if one of the dayanim passes away. But now we're saying there can also be where they deadlock, it can happen that they deadlock, they're exactly 11 to 11, and one of them says, any a day, I don't know. Well, we said in the case of Dinin Nefoshes, we said they can have 12 guilty, 11 innocent, and that's not enough to convict him. Then we start adding dayanim two at a time. Yeah. Okay. Mishnah says, "Hated ma'aymin to Aden, al Aden afoshes." How do we warn the Aden we're going Aden afoshes? Now Aden mamon, now dinim mamonis. We learned in the previous parak that we tell them the Mishnah had just said ma'aymin alayhen, and it didn't specify how. The Gemara went through a couple of possibilities, and eventually it said we tell them you should realize if you're about to testify falsely, even those people who hired you to do it are going to look down on you and think that you're worthless people for doing that. So by dinim mamonis, that's enough. By dinim afoshes, we need something stronger. Hoy machnisin osen, so they would bring in the edim to the Beis Din, or ma'ayman alehen, and they would warn them. They would start by telling them, Shema tomru me'oymed. Now maybe you're going to think to say, edus for us, by estimation, you're going to assume that the person is guilty based on circumstances, as we're going to give an example in the Gemara. Or by hearsay, you hear that other people are saying that this person did it. And the Yad Ramah adds, even if it's like a rumor that keeps on going on, and obviously there has to be some truth to it, you're going to think where there's smoke, there's fire, so therefore, no. Or you're going to testify, Mishmur would just mean there's rumors going around. Aid me p'aid would be that you heard from another aid. So other Edom actually saw it, but instead of them coming to Beis Din, they're telling you they told you, and you're coming to Beis Din. Or with P. Adam Naaman, or you're going to say, I heard it from a very trustworthy person, I know I can believe what he says. Shema, or, and the Beis Din continues to them, Shema, now in all those cases, your Edus would be apostle, so be aware of that. They continue, Shema Iyatim Yodim Shasefenu Livdeth Eschem Medirisha V'Hakira. Maybe you don't realize that we're going to be cross-examining you with Dirisha V'Hakira, as we're going to learn in the next parak. So we're going to be asking you a battery of questions to, and in case you're lying, we have good ways of finding out. So now they tell them, Hevu Yodim Shaloka Dinim Mamanas Dinin Afoshes. You should also realize
difference.
That there's a big difference between dinim mominus and dinim nefashis. Dinim mominus, with dinim mominus, if it turns out that you testified falsely, it's not that big a deal. Odom noisin mominum is scapuloi. The person can pay what he wronged the other person, and then that's a kapara for him. Dini Nefoshes. But when it comes to Dini Nefoshes, if we execute somebody based on testimony of yours, which wasn't supposed to happen, then the person's own blood and the blood of his children and his descendants is on you, on you, Adam, until the end of the world. Because potentially this person could have children who would have children, etc., and you prevented all of that from happening. As we find with Cain, killed his brother Hevel. And the pasuk says, "Killed me ochichat soyakim." The blood, the voice, the sound of your brother's blood is crying out to me. Hashem says, "What do you mean, bloods in plural?" Dam ochicha, ela demei ochicha. It doesn't say the blood of your brother. It says the bloods of your brother. Domiv dam zaroisav, meaning his blood and the blood of all the potential descendants that he would have had. So we warn the Edom, don't play around over here. The Gemara continues, Dover Acher, another explanation of why the Pasuk says Dmei Achicha is Shahoya Domin Mushlach Ala Eitzim Ala Avonim, because the blood of Hevel was splattered all over the trees and the rocks, because Cain had hid him in many places. He didn't know, as the Gemara is going to discuss. Cain didn't know how to kill Hevel. Nobody, no person had ever died before. So he's hitting him in many different places, and blood is spurting out all over the place until eventually he killed him. So therefore, that's another reason why it's a Dmei. Now, the Yad Ramah points out that that part is not actually part of what we tell the Dayanim, not part of what we tell the Edim. We don't want to lessen the impact of what we're telling them. We're telling them Dmei Achicha, that you should realize that the blood of this person and all his future descendants is on you. If instead we also tell them a Drasha, by the way, it can also mean, because his blood is splattered all over the place, that's going to weaken the force of the Iyum that we tell them. Continues the Mishnah. Lefichach nivra odim yichidi. Now, therefore, you should know that's why man was created alone. Now, that can mean two different things. It can mean, Marashah discusses it over here. Does it mean that only one pair was created, Odom and Chava, unlike with the other animals where maybe more pairs were created at a time? Or does it mean even Odom himself was created alone and only then was Chava created out of him? Anyway, the Lamdachar comes to teach you, because a person is an Olam Malay. Shekolam Abed Nefesh Achas Miyisrael. Anybody who destroys a single Jewish life, Malal Avakasav Kila Ibrid Olam Malay. Hashem considers it as if he destroyed an entire world. Shekolam Kaim Nefesh Achas Miyisrael. Anybody who preserves a single Jewish life, Malal Avakasav Kila Kiyim Olam Malay. Hashem considers him as though he preserves an entire world. So we tell this to the Edim, really, don't think this guy is just one person. It doesn't matter. You should realize he's an Olam Malay. Now, the Mishnah goes on to mention other reasons as well why Adam was created alone. Here also, you have the Yad Ramah says, again, these other reasons we're not necessarily telling the Edim, because, again, we don't want to weaken the force of what we're telling them. On the other hand, with these next few, the Rambam says we do tell them, because each of these other things is also stressing the importance of one individual. So, Omepnei Sholom Abrius. Another reason why Hashem created Adam alone is because of peace between people. Shaloyema Adam Lachavere Abba Godol Me'avicha. No person should say to the other, "My ancestors are greater than yours." Ultimately, we all trace back to the same ancestors, Adam and Chava. So this way, a person is not going to be a Baal Gaiva, but this way, a person is not going to be a Baal Gaiva over somebody else. And the Gemara is going to expand on all these reasons. The Gemara is going to give more details within each of these reasons. Another reason is so that the minim don't think there are many powers in Shemayim, and each one created their own person. Furthermore, the fact that Hashem created only one man to begin with, Adam, shows the greatness of Hashem. After all, a person would stamp out many coins with one die, and all the coins look resemble one another. As opposed to Hashem stamped every person with the die of Adam Rishon, and not one person looks exactly like the other. That shows the greatness of Hashem. One point is, and Mephoshim explained why the Mishnah needs to bring all these reasons, is because you would have thought otherwise, maybe Hashem should have created many different people to begin with. That way, for one thing, later on in the Masechta, we're going to talk about how did Kayin and Hevel marry in order to be able to have children. What women were there available? And we're saying they married their sisters, which was allowed at that time. It was a special chesed that Hashem did. But still, you would think maybe Hashem should have, to begin with, created various people, and that way they don't have to marry, that way we don't have to override the Isturim of Arayas for them to have children. But the answer is all these reasons that the Mishnah is giving, and more that the Gemara is going to explain, are override that. Therefore, the Mishnah continues, Lefichach, because of all of this, because a person, an individual, is so important, kol echad ve'echad, chayev loimer, bishvili nivra olam. Every person has to say, the world was created for me. Meaning, in other words, so therefore, so because I'm on olam malay, I don't want to ruin myself. I don't want, Rashi says, in other words, a person will realize to himself, I don't want to drive myself out of the world because of doing an aveda. So that will help a person stay away from avedas, realizing I'm an olam malay, but if I do one aveda, then I could ruin it for myself. I could ruin that entire olam malay. So that'll help him keep away. There's a famous vote from the Kotzker that says that a person needs to have two pockets in his clothing. One pocket he should have for the Nivra Olam, and the other one he should have Vanuki off of Afer. Because a person needs that balance. A person needs to know that he has that capability of the entire world. On the other hand, the fact is, he also has to realize that that he's not all there is, that the Eibishter created him and put him in the world for a purpose. Bala Torah, by the way, points out an interesting point. When the pasuk describes Hashem creating Adam, it says, "Vayipach ba'apom nishmas chayim." The ends of the word spell out the word choisam, a stamp, like we're saying over here. Hashem stamped everybody with Adam Rishon stamp. So the Mishnah goes. So this is all the warning that they give them. Again, according to the Yad Ramah, these last few points about why Adam was created alone are not necessarily something we tell the Edim. We just tell them that a person is an entire world. That a person is an entire world. So they shouldn't think that having one person killed is not a big deal. But the Rambam says these parts also we mention to them to show the greatness of Hashem and so on and so forth, because each of these things stresses how even one individual person is important. Next, continues the mission of Hashem Atomru. Now the Dayanim say to the Edim, you might say, Malonu l'tzorazos. You know what? It's true. We're taking on such a responsibility. Why should we get involved in this tzara? Maybe we shouldn't testify, even if we're telling the truth. No, we tell them, Haloi kvanema. After all, the pasuk says, Vahu aid, if a person is an aid, Vahu ra o yoda, or he saw it, or he knows of it. So it would mean, for example, that he saw the loan. Yoda means, for example, that there was a haidah for the loan in front of him, as we learned in the previous parak.
We're talking about the
no, I know, but the point is, the pasuk is talking generically about Eidos. Im lo yagid v'nosava, im lo yagid v'goymer, if he doesn't tell it in Beis Din, then he's going to bear his guilt. So in other words, we see, yes, you have the responsibility, and you're going to be held guilty if you don't say Eidos when you're supposed to. So in other words, don't think that you can get away with it by not saying Eidos at all. But on the other hand, don't think that you should say false Eidos and you think you're going to get away with it either. Then we continue telling the Edim, you might think, you know what, fine, we're willing to take the risk and then be over on that Isser, that we shouldn't have, that we're going to be guilty for the person's blood. What if, after all, you just told us how important one Yid's life is, so maybe we should hold back, and therefore, fine. If it means we're going to be suffering, if it means we're going to be guilty of violating a mitzvah, in Layagid, fine, you know what, we're willing to take that on ourselves and not to cause a Jewish life to be destroyed. So we tell them, no, after all, the pasuk also says when the Rishoyim are destroyed, there is joy. Meaning, in other words, if the guy really is a Rasha, then don't feel bad that you caused his death, because it's a good thing. So then we're telling them, in short, we're telling them both ways. If you're telling true Eidos, then make sure to say it. But if not, then don't. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Ketiv Me'oimed. What does it mean when we tell the Edim that it might be based on an estimation, based on an evaluation, rather than you actually saw it? So we, the Beis Din, tell them, Shemer Kachar Isem. For example, you might have seen a scenario like this. Suppose that one person is chasing another one into a ruined building where nobody else is around. And you chased after him. Which, by the way, later in the Masechta, we're going to talk about the din that you have to try to save a nirdif from a roidif, so they can be chasing after him, not just to give edus if he does kill him, but also to try to save the victim. Yeah. Umut sasim sayif v'yoda, you find the guy with a sword in his hand, v'domim v'taftif, and there's blood dripping from the sword, v'horug mefarfer, and the one who was killed is still writhing and moving around convulsively. So it seems fairly obvious that this person with the dripping sword killed him. But we tell them in kachri isim lo. If that's what you saw, then what you said doesn't count for anything. You can't say Eidos on that, because the fact is, there is always the possibility that maybe the guy that maybe the guy died of a heart attack or something like that and then he stabbed him only after he was dead. So therefore, the fact is, you didn't see the actual killing, therefore you can't give Eidos.
But he's stabbing him, you added to his whatever.
It doesn't matter. Added, if he's dead, he's dead. Yeah. And the Gemara tells Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Omer Rav Shimon Shotach. Rav Shimon Shotach says just that. I'll tell you an exact case like that. Ere b'nechama, it's a lashon of a shvuah. May I see the comfort? The comfort meaning the comfort of the Jewish people. Also, love when Mashiach comes. Shimon Shotach lived in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, but so the Beis Hamikdash was standing, but they still didn't have the Gula Amidus Vashlema. So he can still say, Ere b'nechama, may I see the nechama, which is actually a way of a shvuah. Really, what it means is may I not see the nechama, but in other words, if what I'm going to say, what if the following thing I'm going to say is not true, then I shouldn't see the nechama. Meaning, and if it is true, which it is, then let me be able to see the nechama. It's a lashon of shvuah. You find such expressions even in Tanakh. Imloy such and such. If not such and such, that's the style. So in loyro isi echod, if it's not true that I saw, meaning I most certainly did see a certain person, shorotz acha haver lachorba, exactly that. One person chased another one into a wound building, v'ratzi achra, and I ran after him. There had to actually be two edim, so it means there was somebody else together with Shimon and Shaddach. Obviously, we're just not mentioning him because of the cover of Shimon and Shaddach. Anyway, v'raisi sayif v'yodei, I saw the man's holding a sword, v'domim v'taftif, and blood from the victim is dripping from it. The horog mafarfer, and the one that he killed is still moving around. The amauti loy, I says to the murderer, Rosha, mi horgelozeh. After all, who killed this person? We know very well. Oyani oyata. It was either me or you, and it wasn't me, so it had to be you. Avo ma'aseh, but what can I do? I can't come to Beis Din and testify against you. She'ein domcha masu b'yabi. Your blood is not given over into my hand, meaning I don't have the ability to come and take you to Beis Din as an aid. You must amnest, because the pasuk says that you can only convict a person based on the testimony of two edim, and this is not testimony because I didn't see the actual killing.
But if he goes inside, he doesn't see anybody else there?
It
doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. Now we're going to learn later in the Masechta that, for example, when it comes to Hasra, for example, even the victim himself can give Hasra to the Ritzeach. So yes, the Ritzeach can have had Hasra, but nevertheless, there still has to be two Edim that actually see the thing. So
if he saw actually one aid is sort of happening,
one aid is not enough.
Right, but for one aid, see, he can make him swear, or you?
No, swearing is only by dinim ominous. But Shimon Shatach continues to the guy, Hayodea Machshavas, Hashem who knows people's thoughts, and he knows what you actually did, Yiporam, he will pay back this person, you, who killed somebody else. So what happened? Omru, they said, Lo Zozu Misham, they did not move from there before anybody had even moved from there. A snake came and bit this guy, the murderer, and he died. So the Gemara asked, Vahai Bar Nochashu, Tosfos points out there had to have been other people there, otherwise not a matter of Oymed, even if Shimon Shatach saw the actual killing, he's only one person. When he uses the expression Oyani Oyata, he doesn't really mean me or you, he means us or you, because us meaning I and the other aide who's with me, but nevertheless we can't because we didn't actually see the actual killing.
They both didn't see the
case. That's the point. That's the point Tosfos is saying. It had to be, if it was only one of them, there's no chiddush. One of them, if it was only Shimon Shaddach, there's no chiddush. Even if he had actually seen the killing, he can't do anything anyhow. He can't bring him to Beis Din because one aid is not enough. But the point is, even there were two aidim, but it wasn't actual aid just because it's only based on the evaluation. It's 99% sure, but that's not good enough. So the Gemara asks, "Why by Nochash? Such a person who killed somebody else, why is he getting punished by a Nochash? Why is Hashem punishing him through a Nochash, through a snake biting him?" Now, murder is one of the two things for which a person gets saif. We're going to learn later on the Masechta. The Dalet Mishnah is based in Skilah Sefer Hereg V'Chenek, and murder is one of the two that gets hereg, where his head is chopped off. Now, a snake biting him is not like that. In fact, it's a harsher, it's a harsher penalty, as the Gemara is going to point out, it's a type of sefa. Rabbi Yosef says, we also learn in a braisa from the yeshiva of Chizkia, miyoyim shechora beis mikdash, ever since the beis mikdash was destroyed, after we should bottle the Sanhedrin, even though the Sanhedrin is bottled and no longer functions the same way as it did before, arba misses lay bottle. Still, the four misses based in are not bottle. Someone says, what do you mean, lay bottle? Well, bottle. The fact is, they are bottle. The Sanhedrin is not doing dalva misses based in anymore. Tosfos, by the way, points out that even in the time of the Bis Mikdash, we have the story of Shimon Shad that happened in the time of the Bis Mikdash, and we're still saying that Hashem punishes a person when Mrs. Bastin can't be done. What we just mean, in other words, is that after the Bis Mikdash is destroyed, then you never have it. Before that, you would have, depending whether there were Edim or not. If there were Edim and Hasra and the whole nine yards, then Bastin can deal with it, and if not, then Hashem deals with it. After the Bis Mikdash is destroyed, then always. Tosfos also points out, we're going to learn in the next perek, that 40 years before the Churban, the Sanhedrin left the Lishkas HaGazis. So why are we saying from when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? We should say from 40 years before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So Tosfos says because once in a while they would return to the Lishkas HaGazis to judge on in certain cases. So they wouldn't do it with Ritzicha, but they would do it in other cases during those last 40 years. So we can't say with a blanket statement that Mrs. Bastin would bottle.
Learned before why 40 years.
We said because they realized that the Churban is coming soon, and they realized and fishy roitzchim. There were many roitzchim. There were many people who were murdering and couldn't be brought to justice. So therefore, they figured the only thing we can do is leave the Lishkas HaGazis, and then we're potter from it, and Hashem will have to deal with them. But for Ritzicha, they would never return, but for other purposes, for other Mrs. Bastin, sometimes they would. Then Tosfos also brings up the point that after all, here the Gemara is going to say that people who do things that are chayav misses based in, then Hashem punishes them in one of the ways that we're going to discuss. We see in practice that there are many people who do horrible averus, and they live long lives. So Tosfos explains that, first of all, they can have schusim, they can have the mitzvah, the schus of the mitzvahs that they did.
Overrides killing someone.
Not overrides, but in other words, Hashem will remove them in this world, and Hashem will deal with them in the Olam HaEmes. Anyway. So what do we mean? Din ara missus le bottle. We mean the judgment of the Dalet missus is not bottle, meaning even though Beis Din is not able to do them anymore, Hashem still takes care of the matter. Mishin is chayv skila. See, if somebody was chayv skila, so skila consists of, as we're going to learn in the sixth parak, they would throw the person off a platform twice the height of a person, and if that killed them, then fine, and if not, then they would throw a big stone on him. So therefore, in other words, skila, in other words, involves falling from a height or getting something heavy falling on him. Oy no from an agag, therefore either he falls off a roof, oy chaya dersatoy, or an animal knocks him down and kills him. Mishin is chayiv sreifa. A person who is chayiv sreifa, which, as we're going to learn later on, involves that they would pour hot lead down his throat and burns him from the inside. Oy noifel b'dleika, either he gets burnt in a fire and completely burnt. Oy nochash makishoy, or a snake bites him and the snake's venom is hot and it burns and it burns him from the inside. Mishin is chayiv hariga, a person is chayiv hereg, which involves having his head chopped off. Oy nimsel amalchus, either he gets handed over to the Roman government and they would execute people by beheading them. Oy listin boin olav, where he gets attacked by robbers and they would also kill him with swords. Mishin is chayiv chenek, somebody who's chayiv chenek, which involves that they would strangle him, they would cut off his breathing. Oy teveh benahar, either he drowns in a river and can't breathe. Oy Mesbisrunchi, or he dies of a disease called srunchi, which is basically a swelling in his throat, which pops off his airway. So the point is, in other words, that a nochosh would be for somebody who's chayv sreifa. Here this guy killed somebody else, which is hereg. So why didn't the Eibishter arrange that, for example, that a robber comes out of a corner over there and kills him or something? Why a snake? So the answer, Amri, Hahu chet achrini hachriti habebe. The answer is this person was guilty of another avera for which he was chayv sreifa. And we're going to learn later on in the Masechta. Mishin is chayiv shtei misses based in. Nidin machamura, a person is chayiv two misses based in. He gets judged with a stricter one. So here he's chayiv both sreifa and hered. So therefore Hashem punished him with sreifa. Or the equivalent of sreifa, which is the snake. Okay. We said in the Mishnah Me'oimid, we said that we tell the, so we said that we're telling the Edim, do you think you're going to do it based on your evaluation of the facts rather than having actually seen it? And that's no good. So the Gemara points out, dinin afoshes hudalei amdinan. Now apparently by dinin hudalei amdinan rather, by dinin afoshes we can't evaluate like that. We have to see the actual thing. Hob dinin mamonis amdinan, implying that by dinin mamonis we would have been able to. If we know, if we have good reason of circumstantial evidence to say that something happened in dinin mamonis, it sounds like the Mishnah is implying that would be fine, because it's only by dinin afoshes that we're warning the Edom not to do that. Which means, keman kerab acha, which would mean, therefore, who is our Mishnah like, would have to be like Rab Acha. The Tanya, Rab Acha Omer, gomel ha'oicher ben agmalim, if you have one camel who's oicher among the other camels. What is oicher? Rashi has two explanations. One is that it means he's biting. He's going crazy and he's biting other animals. The other explanation, Rashi says, is oicher is called when the animal is in heat and it's mating. Now, the Gemara mentions in Bechoris the mating habits of most animals. Most of them mate front, the male's front to the female's back. Camels, the Gemara says over there, is ocher keneged ocher, is back to back. So therefore, the mating of camels is called oicher. Now, a lot of times when animals are mating and they're in heat, a lot of times they go crazy, especially they don't want any other potential rivals over there, so they're kicking and biting and whatever. So now you have one camel doing that among other camels. The nimsa gomel horug b'tzidoi. And then you find a dead camel near it, via duach as a hergoy, then you can be sure that this is the one that killed it. So even though you don't have actual edim that saw the camel killing the other one, nevertheless, Rav Acha is saying that's good enough evidence to be mechayev of the owner of the camel that we know was going crazy. But the Gemara says, no, v'litai mech, according to your svara that you bring that up. We also warned the edim by din and afoshes. We said, aid me pi aid, into Katoni. The Mishnah had mentioned about hearsay evidence where you heard it from another aid, and we warned them not. You're going to tell me the din and afoshes, hu delay amrinan, hub din and mamanas amrinan. You're going to tell me that work, that doesn't work by din and afoshes, but such a thing can work by din and mamanas, doesn't work by din and mamanas either. Vatsnan, we learned earlier in the Masechta, in the previous Perek, Im Omar, if the aid says, Hu Omar li shani chayev loy, how do I know that Reuven owes Shimon money because Reuven himself told me in private that he owes it to him, and there wasn't an actual haidah in front of Edim like we learned about before, or Ish Pliny Omar li shul chayev loy, or Pliny told me that Reuven owes Shimon the money, loy amaklum, that doesn't count for anything, ad shiyem, for neinu haidah loy shul chayev loy, masayim zuz, unless he says he gave a haidah in our presence, in the presence of Edim, and he knew the Edim were there, etc., as we learned previously, that he owes him the 200 zuz. Alma, afagav de psili de dinim mominus. So we see that we have that kind of detail is possible by dinim mominus as well. Yet, I'm reading lohu b'dinim afashis. Nevertheless, we do tell it to them by dinim afashis. We don't just say they should know it. We want to stress by dinim afashis as much as possible that they should be aware and stay away from false aiders. Hochanami, the same thing you can say in our Mishnah. When it mentions Me Oymed, when it mentions based on circumstantial evidence, Afagav de Psili, the Dinim Mominus, sure, it may be possible by Dinim Mominus as well. Maybe our Mishnah is not only according to Rab Acha, maybe it's according to the Chachamim, who are saying that no, you need actual evidence that this camel killed the other one. Nevertheless, I'm reading Lohu Dinim Nefashis, that shouldn't prevent us from telling it to them by Dinim Nefashis as well, because we want to stress to them as much as possible all the possible ways in which they might think to give aiders that's not going to stand up and face in, and therefore we're going to mention whether things, even things that are applicable to dinim mominus as well. So no proof one way or the other whether so our Mishnah doesn't have to be only like Rav Acha. Our Mishnah can be like the Chachamim who disagree with Rav Acha as well. Okay. The Mishnah had said, Hevu Yodim Kola, we tell them that be aware that we're going to be cross-examining you, and Dinim Mominus are not like Dinim Afoshis, and we mentioned the point about Cain killing Hevel, and we said that the sound of your brother's blood, of your brother's bloods in plural, and we said, why bloods is because we have the Dom of Adam Zari Yosef, we have the blood of Hevel himself, and the blood of all his future potential descendants. So the Gemara continues on this. Amar of Yehuda Breid Reb Chiya. Why Dmei Achicha? Now we mentioned in the Mishnah also because the blood was splattered all over the place. Malamed Sha'asa Kain Behevel Ochav Chaburis Chaburis. We learn exactly that Kain was making many, many wounds on Hevel and beating them up in different tzias, and then different kinds of wounds and different kinds of stabs. He didn't know where a person's soul leaves, what kind of blow is fatal. Adchi gil tzavore, until he reached his neck, and then that's when Hevel died. So that's why the blood is splattered all over, is because Cain was beating him up and trying to kill him. Ever since the earth opened its mouth and received Hevel's blood, Meaning, in other words, exactly that. Tosfos points out, blood in general gets absorbed into the ground, but nevertheless, usually you see there's still a mark, there's still some stain over there. Here it was so completely swallowed up that you couldn't even see a stain over there. So it was wrong to do that. In fact, the Pasuk says, Hashem tells Cain, the earth is cursed because of that, because it hid all evidence of the crime. So shuv like pascha, the earth never opened its mouth again to sing to Hashem. We know that all the nevoim sing to Hashem, but now it doesn't. Shenema, as the pasuk says, miknafa oret, from the edge. Knaf literally means the wing, so it means the edge of the earth. Zmiras shemainu. We've heard songs, Tzvila Tzadik, the beauty for the Tzadik. This is talking about Yemos HaMashiach, when the Tzadikim are going to be singing in praise to Hashem. But why Miknafa Oretz, V'lemi Piha Oretz? We see that it says from the wing, from the side, from the corner of the earth, rather than from the mouth. The earth is not opening its mouth to sing, because he would open its mouth wrongly to swallow Hevel's blood completely. So Gemara says, Esvish, what does that mean? One meaning of it can be that we see the way the Eibishter created the world and should cause us to sing to Hashem in praise. But Lamaisa, you see, people all the time see what's going on in the world and they don't think there's anything special about it. So that's representing, in other words, that the earth is not singing because we're not singing, because we don't think to sing to Hashem about the great things that we see in the world. So Gemara asks, what do you mean, Esich Chizkiyah? Okay, so this is Rabbi Yehuda, the son of Rabbi Chiyah, said this point. So Rabbi Yehuda's brother, Chizkiyah, asked him, what about the Pasuk says, Vatiftach Haaretz Aspiyah? The Pasuk says, when it comes to Korach and his group, the earth opened up its mouth and swallowed them up. So we see the earth does open its mouth. Amalei, so Rabbi Yehuda answers him, L'ra Pascha, the world opened up, the earth opened up its mouth for bad, to punish the Rishoyim, L'toiva like Pascha, but it doesn't open its mouth anymore for good, to sing to Hashem, because it forfeited that, because it swallowed up and caused Hevel's blood to disappear. Tosfos points out a couple of interesting things in this. First of all, Tosfos brings an interesting thing from the Truvas HaGaonim. In Eretz Yisrael, in the times of the Gaonim, they had the minhag to say Kedusha only on Shabbos. We say it on weekdays as well. But why is that? Because based on this pasuk, Miknaf Ha'aretz, we're saying that from the wing of the earth. So all the Malachim, we know, are described as having six wings. So on Shabbos, each day of the week, then the Medrash brings that the Truva of the Gaonim brings each day of the week the Malachim sing to Hashem and praise Hashem with one of those six wings. Come Shabbos, they say to Hashem, "We're out of wings." So Hashem says, "I have one wing on earth," meaning the Tzaddikim, the Jewish people who say Shira, Miknaf Ha'aretz, Zmiras Shemayim, Tzvila Tzaddik, and therefore the Minhag in Eretz Yisrael was to say Kedusha only on Shabbos. We say it during the week as well. Anyway, Tosfos also points out you have that the earth opened up and swallowed the bodies of the Mitzrayim that died in Kriyas Yamsuf. So we see the earth did open up its mouth for good. So Tosfos says because that was mainly for the good of the Mitzrayim, that they should have a decent burial, that's not considered good. Good would be in order to reward the Tzaddikim, and that we don't find the earth opening up its mouth for. Ben Yehoyada says anyway, Tzivla'im Me'aretz doesn't necessarily mean literally that the earth swallowed up and swallowed them up. It just means they were covered up by the water and we never saw them again. So maybe it's not the actual earth opening up. So all of that we're saying was as a consequence of what Cain did, and the fact that the earth, so to speak, became an accomplice in it by covering up the blood. The result is that now the earth doesn't have the ability to sing to Hashem, to open up its mouth for good, to help Tzaddikim, only to punish the Rishoyim. And that means also, in other words, that we look at the earth and we look at it and we see everything seems to be working according to the natural order, and it doesn't occur to us to praise Hashem for the things that happen here on earth. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow. The Gemara is going to bring more drashas from Rabbi Yehuda, from this same Rabbi Yehuda, the son of Rabbi Chiya, and then eventually we'll get back to more drashas on what we learned in the Mishnah about Lefichach Nivra Adam Yechidi.
That's your kayach.